Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. A special feature interview with Minister Ong Ye Kung with Elliot Danker. The Breakfast Huddle, only on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, good morning. It's The Breakfast Huddle. I'm Elliot Danker, and welcome to this post-budget conversation. So in a recent interview with The Straits Times, the International Air Transport Association, or IATA, said that personal and leisure travel could return from the second half of this year as borders reopen. But despite leisure travel being a possibility later this year, the actual volume of travel by the year end, it's probably still going to be low when you compare it with the pre-COVID levels back in 2019. Well, here in Singapore, Minister for Transport Ong Ye Kung has said that our aviation sector will see some recovery this year as some countries reopen their borders, but it will not be realistic to expect some kind of a V-shaped recovery. Instead of forcing a sharp recovery, Singapore will work to help its Batted Air Hub adapt to a new normal and open safely. So what more can be done for it? Plus, it looks like electric vehicles will be taking over our roads soon. The government aims to deploy 60,000 EVs charging points across the country by the year 2030, with some 40,000 in public car parks and 20,000 in private premises. Speaking during the Committee of Supply debate on the Singapore Green Plan 2030, Minister Ong said that this translates into an EV to charging point ratio of about 5-1, assuming a third of cars are EVs by 2030. He also announced further revisions to the road tax structure to bring down road taxes for mass market electric vehicles. The additional registration fee floor for electric cars will also be lowered from 5,000 to zero. So will the decreasing of road tax for mass market electric cars encourage EVs in Singapore? Let's find out that and more. In the studio with me this morning is Minister for Transport Ong Ye Kung. Good morning, Minister. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
I suppose as a bit of an icebreaker, if you don't mind, you've been in the job for a couple of months now.
More than a couple.
More than a couple. In terms of stress level, how much worse is it compared with education? Because if we're not complaining about, or if we're not commenting about education, we're commenting about this world-class transport system that we see here in Singapore.
So you're asking me about stress level?
Worse? Better?
I think it's about the same. The tempo is a bit different. MOE is like a million things you need to look after.
Yeah.
But there are small decisions. No, you can move ahead. MOT, you got a few big hairy problems.
Yeah.
Of which there are no immediate solutions. And you just have to keep on brewing and keep on moving forward. So the nature is different in that way.
But it's an interesting time to be in the transport ministry. One, because we're trying to recover from a pandemic. And two, we're looking at the future of transport. So let's talk aviation.
Yes.
Personal travel could increase, could return by the second half of this year. But honestly, what's your take on this in terms of a realistic recovery for our aviation sector?
You mentioned what IATA said. That was by Alexandra Dejeunet. He's a friend. We confer, so I suppose we share the same view. So what we say, some recovery, but don't expect V-shape. It's neither estimate nor a prediction. I think it's a guess. And I think right now, because of the virus, the way it behaves, this guy have no rules, have no mindset, have no assumption. You just have, based on natural selection and instinct, it wants to dominate the world.
Yeah.
It will mutate, it transmit without symptoms, and you don't know what curveballs it will throw us next.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, vaccination is ongoing. I think many countries and places have a handle on the issue. Not just solely based on vaccination, but also testing, social distancing, mask, and different methods. We keep it under control. So remember, even before there were vaccinations, some places have managed to keep it under control. Yeah. Singapore is an example.
Yeah.
So I think all these different measures plus vaccination is going to have an impact. We'll get better at it. So I think this is the basis from which we feel there should be some recovery.
In terms of throwing money at the problem, one of the best things we've seen is the advancement of tech. There is a trial with Singapore Airlines with regard to some form of an IATA standard health passport. Just checking in with you, Minister, what else is being worked on to help revive the aviation sector?
Yeah. So that's one aspect. I would describe the situation like that. All of us head underwater.
Okay.
Right? There's no traveling. Changi Airport is 2.5. Yesterday I checked, 2.6%, went up by 0.1%. Of our pre-COVID-19 volumes, transit passengers are increasing, not bad. They're coming through Singapore. But it's still a long way away. We are still in crisis situation. Head underwater, you can't travel. So I described Changi as a lung, right? So this lung is now underwater. It can't breathe. So we have now four snorkels to depend on. Yeah, okay. Four snorkels. How does this four snorkels work? I think basically we need to find ways to get rid of the SHN and the quarantine.
Yes.
What can
yes,
replace it? Yeah, this is what that will kill travel. Nobody's going to come to Singapore and stay 14 days for that matter anywhere. Unless you want to go hike 1 year in the Himalayas, you don't mind 14 days SHN before you start your journey. But people come to Singapore for 3 to 5 days usually. They're not going to stay 14 days. So what can safely replace the 14 days? And that's the four snorkels. One is tests.
Okay.
Technically, if I can test you in the morning and at night, I can make sure you are safe the whole time you are here and let you move freely in between the tests.
Okay.
Technically, but it's going to be so onerous.
Mm.
So onerous.
More manpower is needed.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of going for a buffet breakfast, go for your test. Right.
My poor nose.
Yeah. So that's one way. Second is you restrict the movement. Yeah. So we now have a new facility set up by the Temasek Foundation called Connect at Changi.
Yes.
That operate on that basis. You don't mingle around the community. You come to Singapore, you stay on what we call the air site, you stay in this resort. So-called resort in Singapore Expo. You don't mingle with anybody else. And then 2-3 days later, you leave.
Yeah. So bubble within a bubble in
bubble
that
within
sense.
A bubble,
okay.
Yeah. So that's number two. Number three is identify the places that got a handle on the problem.
Okay.
And they are safe. And you can open to them. Yeah, so we did that for Australia, New Zealand, like China, Taiwan, Vietnam. Almost with Hong Kong. And so that's another method. And that was pre-vaccination and it worked. We have not let in new community infections as a result of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And finally, and what is changing the game now is vaccinations. So these are the four snorkels. But don't let each of them operate isolated. See how you can best combine them to the greatest effectiveness such that you can replace SHN. I'll give you an example. Air travel bubble. Basically, you identify a safe place, one snorkel, combine with testing the other snorkel, and you can have safe opening. Unfortunately, we are the only safe place in the world that is opening up to others like that. Yeah, if only others start to do it, then we'll have a bubble, you have reciprocity, you can start to travel.
Mm.
And I hope sometime this year we can do that.
Yeah, also another way, have a burden on us to lead the way in that sense.
And another one that I think is promising is that with vaccinations, you can combine vaccination with moderate infection level, that means they are not super safe, but moderate, and combined with testing, and you can possibly open up a safe travel corridor for vaccinated passengers.
Okay.
That may well happen, second half of the year. Yeah.
Well, that'd be quite interesting. This next question, I really want to get your thoughts on this, and I accept that it's not quite fair to throw this to the government, but we've seen how the aviation sector has had to let go of a lot of staff.
Mm.
Obviously, when it picks up, you got to get them back. But does it come with retraining them and whatnot? What do you think can be done, in your opinion, to repopulate the manpower for the aviation sector quick enough for recovery?
Once we reach the problem you mentioned, then it's difficult. Because it takes years, no? A decade even. You train a pilot and even the air crew, cabin crew, they're air traffic controllers, for example, take years of training. So you don't even want to get into that position where you lose talent, you lose your core capability, and when things recover, you can't get them back. They were moved on.
Mm.
So what we have done is actually to hold on to the manpower as much as we can with the belief that one day this will recover. So far there has been retrenchments and letting go of staff, but it's at the single percentage of the whole population, mostly shouldered by foreign manpower.
Yeah.
But I think the JSS, the Job Support Scheme, helped. DPM Heng, the finance minister, have announced extension of the JSS specifically for the aviation sector, and that will continue to help us for the next 6 months at least. So we didn't lose our core capabilities.
Okay.
Yeah. And if we get into the problem you mentioned, it would be because the sector has expanded, things are reviving. Then we can attract people.
Right.
Yeah. But the key thing is don't lose your core capabilities. Your core staff, you must stay intact.
Stay recoverable in that sense.
So they did a wonderful thing. They deployed airport staff, cabin crew to community centers, to hospitals. All on a temporary basis, you see them around. Sometimes in a restaurant, you find someone serving you particularly of good service.
You know where that's
from. All their hair tied up nicely, neat, and you know where they're from.
Minister, let's talk about EVs in Singapore. It was announced that road tax for mass market electric cars will be lowered to be on par with equivalent models powered by combustion engines from next year. So that removes yet another hurdle to adopt these cleaner vehicles. Is this the only thing that's going to push people to adopt EVs, in your opinion? Is there more that we need to look at?
It helps, but it's not the only thing. But why we do this is just to be fair.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Because when we eyeball through the models, it starts to look somewhat unfair.
Yeah,
I was giving the example, the Hyundai Kona, which is really a medium-sized family car, electric, is paying the same road tax as Audi Q5, Q7, which is a nice, luxurious car. You know, so it starts to look a bit unfair because they run on two separate schedules.
Okay.
There are one based on CC, the other one based on kilowatt power consumption. So we did the adjustment so that it is on par. So I think that will help. But more importantly is two things. One is charging points need to be available, and so that we need to ramp up. So we will be putting up some contract tenders to get them fitted and starting with 8 EV towns, HDB towns. Thirdly, which not many people talk about but the industry know, is the regulations. The regulations now are under the EMA, which is more concerned about power supply reliability. It's going to be transferred over to LTA, where we will look at market development, industry development. And there has been a lot of feedback from the industry who wants to go into the charging business, building up of the EV charging infrastructure. They feel that regulations can evolve. So LTA will take over this part of the work. I need to go to Parliament on this to get it passed. So I shouldn't count my chickens. So once we get that done, we can work with the industry and find the right rules. Down to what plugs to use, can you carry your own cable in your car? These are rules that need to be sorted out.
The more universal, the better, obviously.
Yes, we know the frustration with our handphones, right? Every time you change your handphone, even new models, the jet doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So this is just one of the things where we see day to day, the jet that got to fit. It'll be universal. Yeah.
I have a curious question, and it's with regard to encouraging more people to adopt EVs. Obviously, the bigger picture is the sustainability front, better for the environment, more cost-effective in that sense. But hypothetically, if we get to a state where this is very successful and everyone realizes that it's better to adopt an EV, then there's more cars on the road. Even though it's not polluting the environment, there is congestion. What do we do here? Is there something that's a long-form thing?
I have three responses to that question. One is there won't be more cars on the road because we have a COE.
Okay.
Right, so we froze.
And ERP.
And ERP. And we froze the vehicle population. And actually, amongst all cities in the world, we're probably the only country that has done this. Freezing the vehicle population and then investing in public transport. Secondly, is you do have a point. We should be careful not to go overboard with EVs because you can have EVs that are actually not that environmentally friendly because it's huge. The very big EVs literally carry a ton of battery around.
Yeah.
So you're burning energy to carry energy around, right? And so I think we have to be quite circumspect. Doesn't mean that EV means you're contributing to the environment, just that you're polluting less.
Yes.
Yeah, 50% less. And if you go into a wastage mode, buying many EVs and with many big batteries running around. And you know the batteries do have metals that you need to get rid of and dispose of. And so it's not that you are abating carbon emission. You're just lowering. So that leads to the third point, which is the most important and most sustainable way to travel is still by public transport. And this is where we are putting tremendous amount of investment, 60 billion next few years, next 10 plus years, to build a few more lines. So by the 2030s, we'll have a network that I think, in terms of density, quite equivalent to, say, New York City or Japan. Yeah.
All right. And you really are highlighting a lot of the hairy issues that have to be dealt with over at MOT. Last question, Minister, and it's about taxi operators. And I'm wondering if you've spoken to them about how Singapore will be ceasing new registrations of diesel cars and taxis from the year 2025. So all new car and taxi registrations have to be of cleaner energy models from the year 2030. Any feedback so far?
We've been in conversation with taxi operators on this before we make the announcement. So actually, the number of diesel taxis, this rule is for new registration. So it doesn't affect the existing diesel-run taxis. So there has been very low, or in fact, no diesel taxi registration recently. So I think the operators have already adapted well, and many of them are in fact moving to cleaner models, namely hybrid. Cars, there are still some. But from now to 2025, you can make the adjustments.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I got to say, it's going to be an interesting 10 years for the transport industry here in Singapore. We've been speaking with Minister for Transport, Ong Ye Kung. Minister, thank you so much for taking the time to join me in the studio this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you. You too.
This post-budget conversation was written and produced by Nadira Kamarudin.
A special feature interview with Minister Ong Ye Kung with Elliot Danker, The Breakfast Huddle, only on Money FM 89.3. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.